Hello, welcome to Pause It, Play It. I'm Josh.
I'm Matt.
And I'm Dan.
And this week we have another special guest. It's George from Homefire. George, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. What's up?
I wish we could have invited you on a maybe slightly more interesting song than this one, but you know, you're a busy guy.
Yeah. No, it's all good. I got a lot to say about them all, so whichever is cool with me.
Amazing. How is everyone? How's everyone's week been?
Sick. The weather's turned. My working from home's a lot more like depressing now. But yeah. Whatever. It's all fine.
My furlough from home is as good as ever.
I'm red raw.
Absolutely. And I managed to bore Max from Zella to death with my camera talk. He's discovered his granddad's film camera, and he made a mistake of putting that on Instagram, so now I've bored him to death talking about film.
He had that out the other day. He took his first photograph with it at the studio.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me and Liv were like socially distant, you know, and Max was down the other end of the corridor, and he was like, "I'm gonna take my first photograph with this. I found it the other day." Yeah, he was buzzing.
Probably a great segue there, George. Like, oh, you mentioned a studio there.
I did actually. Yeah, I did. For those of you who don't know.
Yeah, I did your own introduction, Josh.
I wasn't planning on it. But yeah, no, thanks for having me on. For those of you that don't know, I'm George from Homefire Studios, Homefire Recording Co. in Harrogate. And yeah, thanks for having me on. Buzzing to be here. Talk about 1975 and whatnot.
Absolutely. Talk about music in general.
The best thing to come out of Cheshire since...
Cheese!
Cheshire yes. Oaks.
Cheshire Oaks,
Cheshire
yeah.
Oaks, is that one?
What else has come out of Cheshire?
Hollyoaks.
Top
I'm
show.
Not saying that's good. But...
Top show.
Blossoms, technically Stockport is Cheshire.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Fair.
They're okay. They're okay. I don't know if that's divisive, is it?
Yeah. I like Blossoms.
They've got some good songs. The cover of Manic Monday is really good.
Actually. It is really good.
I'll give them that. The best song they've got is Manic Monday by the Bangles.
I like that song. I've not heard their cover of it though. I'm gonna listen to it.
Oh, it's good.
Yeah, it's,
not on Spotify,
it's really good.
Though. You have to go to YouTube.
Oh,
if it's not on Spotify, does it exist? That's the question.
Well, that means Jay-Z's back catalogue of work doesn't exist.
Is that not on Spotify?
No, because he owns Tidal, doesn't he?
There's bits and pieces of Jay-Z songs, but like 99 Problems isn't on it.
Surely missing out on so much cash there.
Yeah. Collision Course is on there, though.
Yeah.
Hang on, this must have been updated. I think everything's on there.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it looks like it. Wasn't Taylor Swift not on Spotify or iTunes or something?
Yeah,
she was anti-streaming, wasn't she?
She took it down for a while, didn't she? And then I'm pretty sure that her whole catalogue got bought, and then now it is. It's up there.
Yeah.
It got bought?
Yeah, Scooter Braun bought it.
Yeah, and she was
not like the rights?
Best pleased. Mm.
I didn't even know she... Wait, she... I didn't even know that was a thing. You can buy the rights to someone's music without them agreeing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Michael Jackson famously owned the rights to Lennon McCartney songs. Don't know who does now.
I know that Tom DeLonge doesn't own the rights to any Blink-182 songs anymore.
Since Dan bought them all.
Since he sold them to fund his expedition for aliens. That's what he's doing.
That's a nut job, innit?
The fund is champagne, more like. That's the glass you can hear in the background, everyone.
I remember when like people like Lily Allen and Taylor Swift were like, and they're in different leagues, aren't they? But like when they were like proper against streaming and like buy my music, you know, I was like, you're so short-sighted. Like the option isn't people buy it on iTunes or people stream it. It's like, you're going to let them stream it or they're going to download it illegally. You need to let them stream it.
Yeah.
It's like, I pay £120 a year now for music, which I didn't used to. like, used to download stuff for free. Don't tell anyone. No label owners on this podcast, right?
No comment.
Well, in Rainbow by Radiohead, the one that they did the Pay What You Want, that was their most profitable album.
Was it?
Because it went a major label they were on. I don't know if they did it independently or...
Yeah, that was the thing. It wasn't cut with anyone. It just went straight to the band.
But yeah, even like through Choose Your Own Price for it, still the most profitable one.
That's interesting. Bandcamp had a feature. I don't know if they still have that feature, actually, where you could pay what you want. Which I think it's pretty cool. Because if you want to really support an independent artist that's putting music out, or like a real art project like that one was, it's pretty cool to be able to do that. You know, because there is those people out there that will download it for free. But there is those people out there that might pay, you know, serious dollar for the privilege and whatnot. So pretty cool.
I once downloaded a mashup album. This guy called Totem had mixed Queens of the Stone Age with Kanye West. And it was really good, but he made the mistake of letting me pay whatever I wanted for it. And of course, I chose to pay nothing for it.
Oh.
Which I would think that was really bad, but I was like, well, if you're going to let me have it for free, I'm going to have it for free. But maybe I should go back and give him some money for it.
Yeah, the guilt sounds like it's got you anyway.
Yeah,
I think that's the
idea,
isn't it?
When was this, about 2004?
If you're going to do that, you just got to own it.
Yeah.
You just got to bust in and be like, yo, that's mine now. Bye.
I think it'd have been 2014. At the time, you know, I was working at Next. I couldn't afford anything.
Apart from tickets for 1975 and shoes for Dan.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that and a MacBook Pro.
We did buy all the 1975 stuff.
I'm there going, sorry, Mr. Totem, I cannot afford to give you any money for this, for your hard work while I download it to my MacBook Pro.
I bet he gets like analytics as well, like of like device downloaded to versus like how much you paid. Like, you cheap motherfucker.
Yeah. Yeah, Sony Ericsson paid £10 and it's like, oh my god, this guy on a MacBook Pro is paying nothing.
Well, that's the reason I couldn't pay anything, you know. I had nothing left.
The Apple tax.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, don't get me started on the Apple tax.
Do you remember when what's it called, when Lars Ulrich from Metallica was like, what was he against? Is he against Napster? Was that
it?
Like...
It was Napster. Yeah, and he took them on big time. And then there was like Metallica fans burning their records and stuff outside the courthouse. And it was like, why are you upset about that if you've been buying the records? Just made no sense at all.
That's a very good point. Yeah.
It made no sense at all. I think maybe Metallica's label like paid like a bunch of like people to be outside, you know, and like causing a fuss for some press or something. So I remember seeing that and just thinking that makes no sense at all. That was on some kind of monster documentary. Have you seen that?
I've got it on DVD, yeah.
Oh my God, yeah. I got it on DVD when I was like 14, 15. So yes. Informative. Taught me how to argue with my bandmates. It's amazing. for those of you that haven't seen it, 90% of that documentary is just James Hetfield arguing with Lars and
everyone.
everybody basically. It's a real uncomfortable watch, which I enjoyed.
I should say though, this is a Saint Anger safe space, because I like it, and Matt, you like it as well, don't you?
I had a soft spot
like
for that record.
I don't feel like I've got any feelings for it, to be honest. I've never really been that into Metallica. I like the song Saint Anger.
I got great memories of that. Great memories of it. I remember playing GTA. San Andreas had come out. And I remember I used to put St. Anger on and then play GTA San Andreas, but turn the sound off and listen to Metallica while I was playing it. Just like riding around, shooting people, listening to Lars Ulrich's poor snare drum.
You could probably pin that down to like a 3-month period in your youth, like when St. Anger came out versus when San Andreas was out. You're
literally,
like, that's what you're doing
literally.
Right then.
And I had this little CD speaker system that I was playing it out of. And I was rotating that with a different CD, but I won't mention what that one was. It's not good.
Would you say that listen to that snare drum in St. Anger was the start of your musical career?
Oh, Josh! Yes!
It was an informative experience for sure. I remember seeing a video of him actually a couple of years later, and it was like a behind the scenes kind of thing. And he had a snare drum in his hand, and he was hitting it. And he was turning the snares on and off, and he was like, "Success, turn them off. Failure, success, failure."
He's such a cock, isn't he?
I know, isn't he? He knows what he's doing. I like it when he's in. Get him to the Greek. He's in.
Yeah.
He's in that, and he does some of the worst acting I've ever seen, and then like rolls back over. It's incredible.
So what's going on with his snare in St. Anger? I'm listening to it now. Because is the snare off the drum when he's like hitting it?
Yeah, yeah.
And he puts it back on for like some certain hits.
I don't think he puts it back on at all. I think they just turned it off. They're like, no snare.
They're
like,
there's no snares on the actual snare drum.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's tuned really high, and then they didn't do any guitar solos, so. Basically, just take the two biggest components of Metallica out of Metallica and then bang an album out.
Do you know what, though? I don't hate the no guitar solos on it.
Yeah, fair. True.
I think there's some decent songs on St. Anger, to be honest.
There's some... is it Sweet Amber?
Yeah.
That riff is sick and so satisfying to play.
Mm.
The Unnamed Feeling, that's a little dark horse on that record.
Yeah, Unnamed Feeling's amazing.
And then, like, Frantic... That vocal that he does on that bit where he just like runs out of air is absolutely awesome. It's a great record, to be fair. It's got a lot of intensity on it. You can feel the... you guys are going to have to check out the documentary, Some Kind of Monster, because it has... it makes the album make a lot of sense when you see how it was made.
Yeah, on a slightly more serious note, George, how did you first get into like music and playing music and stuff like that?
It's a half-decent story, actually. So I got two older sisters... And my elder sister, Kate, got a guitar for her birthday and she never played it. It was just like in a bedroom for maybe 2 or 3 years. And I got to kind of 11 or 12 years old and I was like, yo, do you mind if I borrow your guitar, kind of give it a go, see if I like it kind of thing? She was like, yeah, I never use it, sure, like knock yourself out kind of thing. So I stole it, took it away, realised that playing guitar was really difficult and then put it back down again and never touched it for a couple of years. I think I tried to learn like the James Bond theme tune and I couldn't do it. And I was like, fuck, this is lame. I'm not going to bother. And then it was actually one of my uncles was spending quite a lot of time around ours. And he was a really good guitar player and his whole family were musicians. And he kind of got me back into it. And just at a similar time, one of my friends had seen the guitar at my house. And he was like, yeah, I've got a drum kit for my birthday. I know a couple of guys from school that want to start a band. Do you want to play? But I was still like absolutely awful. Like I could hardly play a note. I was like, fuck it. I was like, yeah, yeah, I play. Yeah, sure. I'll come down to band practice. I'll be there. Yeah, see you on Saturday kind of thing. And I turned up at the beginning of the afternoon and I couldn't play Seven Nation Army. And I left at the end of the afternoon and I could.
That's nice.
And that was it. That was the start. So just lied my way into a band. Good foundation for the music industry, really.
Make it till you make it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Well, I did a similar thing with the studio, to be honest. John had John's original business partner, John Shepherd, that is my business partner now, who started the studio with Rowan and Toby. He was going away on holiday and he needed a recording doing, and the other guys weren't around. And my band had been one of the first bands in to rehearse at the studio to test the space out, kind of get a feel for how it sounds and stuff while they were putting acoustic treatment up. So I've known John since day one of the studio, and that was kind of how I got involved and became a producer ultimately. But John hits me up and he's like, do you want to do this recording? I've got this location recording going on. It's for like a stage school called Stagebox, and they do like pretty high profile stuff now. They've got a lot of their company on like TV and on the West End and stuff like that. So they train young kids from like 5 years old right up to 17 years old for the stage. He was like, I got this recording, do you want to do it? And he was like, you know, you're happy to do it? And I had absolutely no idea how to do it. And I was just like, fuck yeah, sign me up. So I went to the studio, I collected the kit,
I went back to my house, set everything up in the lounge, did it wrong a couple of times until I could do it right, and then just got myself set up for the day, and I just rocked up there in the morning in Leeds, just sweating, and I just did it, got it right, and it just went from there. So that was kind of my in into the studio and into production. So a similar way to how I got into guitar and being in bands and stuff.
Fell into it.
Jumped headfirst into it.
Yeah. You can't fail. It's not an option.
Exactly, yeah.
So when you did that, did you know much about production?
Yeah, so when I left school, I got myself set up with like a Mac. I was doing like landscape gardening and stuff, and I saved up my cash and bought like an iMac and a little interface and like a Rode NT1. And I just started like recording like DI guitars and like MIDI drums that sounded absolutely horrendous. And kind of doing demos in the bands that I was in over the years, just at home, just like in my parents' garage, basically, when I was younger. And so I had a reasonable kind of foundation of like how things worked, but it was a totally different system. I'd like hardly ever used Cubase. I didn't really know my way around that stuff. So it was a bit of a risk, but John trusted me and had shown me how to do everything. So I just jumped in and did it.
Just stumbled upon it, and now you both like, that's amazing how it works. And I didn't know that. I didn't know that was how it started.
Yeah, I took it and run with it, man. I did a lot of the demoing for my band. So when we were kind of writing and stuff, I'd shell everything out and we'd do like a pretty comprehensive demo before we took it to the studio. Because we used to record up in Glasgow with a guy called Bruce Rintoul, who really helped me out. He had a big hand in kind of me going from kind of not knowing a lot to knowing a little bit more. So
that was when you were in the band. Wild. Was it when you said, yeah. Did that just all kind of culminate when you started working at Home Fighter?
Yeah, sure. So we did the full EP with The Wild up in Glasgow with Bruce at 45 Side, and we did a lot of the demos and stuff at Home Fire. So I'd kind of shell stuff out at home, and then we'd take it into Home Fire and kind of pre-pro it because we rehearsed there, and then we took it up there. But then we did kind of a few B-sides after the EP had gone live. We did like a few kind of stripped versions and all that kind of thing, and we recorded those from Home Fire. And that was kind of me cutting my teeth in the studio and kind of getting familiar with how things worked and all that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, it was very much kind of working above my pay grade and kind of like just jumping in at the deep end and just trying to make things happen. I knew what I wanted to do. That was the thing. I knew what I wanted things to sound like. It was just how the hell to get there.
That is the hard bit, making it sound like it.
Outboard gears is mad to me. Like, I think anyone can sort of open a sequencer and like give it a go with some VST instruments and stuff, but like sending it out of the computer to come back having something happen to it.
Oh man, yeah.
Like, played it back. That's like, what? How does that even work?
Yeah, that's where we're kind of getting to with the studio now. Is like, we started out and it's been very much like from the ground up, you know. So like when I started working at Home Fire and I became John's business partner, at the start, we were using like two Rode NT1s as overheads.
Yeah.
You know, and they're like 100 quid each, and that's what we were using on drums. And then, you know, you think like now we're using like Telefunken and Neumann and like Coles. Whoa. And it's just absolutely sick. Like ridiculous. The kit that we've got now is just, you know, absolutely world class. So the sound at source is just everything, really. But yeah, the outboard stuff's exciting. It's pretty cool. The kind of like hybrid, I think like hybrid music production is kind of going to be, you know, obviously the future, like the pairing of the digital and the analog stuff. So we have a limited amount of kind of analog stuff, but an outboard and whatnot. But it's certainly exciting to start running stuff through. Like the first time we got like a piece of outboard, it was like we got a Neve 1073 preamp,
right?
And we started recording with that, you know, recording vocals, and we had I think we had the C414, the AKG, and then we got the Neumann U87. So that was like our forever mic, you know, that we're really excited to get.
Just for those who don't know what a Neumann U87 is, and this is funny anyway, but at school, our music teacher, he had a Neumann U87, and when we used it, he wouldn't actually let us touch it. Trust us with it. So, yeah, literally did it all himself. He just let us be around it in its presence.
Don't play your instrument near my mic. I'll do it.
I've seen the way that you pour milk, Josh, so I'm not surprised he didn't let you near it.
We had a funny drum recording. We had a funny drum recording recently where we were, we'd kind of mic'd everything up and we'd gotten everything going and we were really happy with how everything sounded. And the drummer was like, oh, I'm doing this like closed hat kind of cool groove thing. And I'd really like to kind of spot mic it or whatever and make sure that it's going to be kind of crystal clear in the mix. And we were looking around and we were like, oh, fuck, like what mic are we going to use for this? Because we've used this one, we used that, and we used that. And then I was just like, it's the U87, isn't it? Just sat there, spare. So just like,
for a high-up through, mic. Oh my God.
Put the U87 on a stand and just popped it above the hi-hat and went through to the control room. And I was like, well, that hi-hat sounds fucking sick.
Yes.
We coming in and like when people were coming in, instead of showing them the song, we just like soloing the hi-hat track, just like, yeah, check this out.
To be fair though, what did you mic up with that? Sorry, the hi-hat or the snare?
Hi-hat.
Yeah, that I find like a hi-hats, if they're done well, just really cut through.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, I can completely understand why you would put that mic on a hi-hat.
See, the thing for a hi-hat is that they're like, they're one of those components of a mix that can just ruin a song.
Yeah.
So easily, by accident, because they're overlooked. Have you ever listened to, obviously you've listened to, Paradise City by Guns N' Roses?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Listen to that with fresh ears and listen to the hi-hat and then tell me if you can listen to it again afterwards, because I can't.
I mean, I haven't heard that song in a long time, but
it's a bit of a curse being able to hear things that I couldn't hear years ago.
Yeah.
I used to really like music.
Yeah. I see what you mean. I actually can't listen to Paradise City because once me and a few friends did a fancy dressed as Guns N' Roses. It's a 14-mile fancy dress walk. And for the entirety of the walk, we had Paradise City on a loop playing.
Ooh.
Yeah. What? From a cassette.
Wow.
So think of the sound quality on the hi-hat there.
Why just Paradise City? Was it just like the single cassette?
No, they stopped it and put it back at every time.
Yeah. No, well, I don't know why Paradise City was chosen, but yeah, it was
obviously whoever was in charge knew how to party.
Yeah.
One thing I was gonna ask George. I don't know how to phrase it, but like you came from, so you were listening to like Metallica and then were in like a guitar based band. And then a lot of the music you produce now is very much like pop and electronic stuff. How did you get more into doing that than go down the route of like being a sort of rock music producer?
Yeah, that's an interesting question actually. So like growing up, when I was a kid, all I would listen to was like Queen and ABBA and Slade. My dad was like an unbelievably big Slade fan. And they've got some tunes, man. I know people laugh. It's like, oh, you do one Christmas song, you know. It's like you shag one sheep and then that's it for the rest of your life. But they got some great records. And I kind of grew up listening to those three artists on repeat a lot for a long time. My mum was like really into ABBA, so I used to listen to a lot of that. And I think ultimately, my love was really for songwriting.
And
like it kind of manifested itself, you know, like when I was a teenager and like all my friends and we were listening to Metallica and Guns N' Roses and we're all like, thought we were a bunch of punks and we were kind of doing like covers of rock tracks and I got really into guitar. But the thing that I was always really into was songwriting and songs. And I used to listen to all sorts of stuff. I used to listen to like Katy Perry. Like Teenage Dream is just like such an amazing record and
one of the best songs, particularly for the last decade.
It's just such a great tune, man. They had so many good songs on that record, and I used to listen to Lady Gaga like early on and all that kind of stuff. Like, so that was on my iPod next to, you know, like Taking Back Sunday and Bullet for My Valentine and Trivium and Atreyu and like all these, you know, all these bands that were kind of the time.
as well as like all the big hitters like Guns N' Roses and Metallica and whatever. So yeah, I think the transition really happened for me was when I started seriously producing, and when I split with the band and kind of went off on my own direction. I think I did, if I'm being totally honest, I think I became like very jaded with that kind of like rock band Kerrang scene. I was really into like Don Broco and Death of Anna and stuff like that. And they're great bands, you know, and they've done great things, but I think you'll see like even in their music, like they've moved away from that, you know, that, you know, Death of Anna's latest record, Bring Me the Horizon's latest record, Don Broco's latest record, you know, like they've all transitioned and became poppier and poppier and poppier. I think I just did something very similar. And then I guess part of it's a bit of a symptom of like who I'm working with. So the people that I started working with, I was never going to be creating like really like Kerrang-y kind of rock music with and for. And I'd kind of stopped writing that kind of stuff. So I wasn't really attracting those kind of people either. So a couple of different things really, I guess.
What about from a technical perspective? Obviously like... there's so much more opportunity to like mess about than there is with like, you know, a couple of guitars, a bass and a drum kit. Like you sort of, you can be maybe a little bit creative with the production, but there's not much you can add to it. But I feel like your production on like Zella's stuff is like crazy. So, but you've never had any like formal introduction to producing different sorts of music. It's all just been...
Yeah, so, you pick stuff up. I mean, at the studio, the main push for me and John is kind of like, quality rather than like a particular genre or whatever. So we record stuff from like acoustic. I mean, some of the first production stuff I did was for like an acoustic duo called the Paperweights, and they phenomenal songwriters, like just stunning lyrics, great stories. They're like a male and a female vocal, and they kind of like weave these like beautiful harmonies in together and stuff. And I heard them, that John was recording them one night, and I was like, guys, I'd really like to just like take these stems away. This was before I was like officially involved in Homefy. I was like, could I just like pinch your tunes and just put some like atmospheric stuff on and see how it goes? And we ended up releasing them and doing like a really sick EP that was pretty well received. And they were actually like one of the first acts that ended up on the label, and we did like an event for them and all that kind of thing. So cool. We've got so many different people that come in for so many different styles that I've really just kind of managed to get deep in lots of different areas, and then I'm able to apply the best bits of the best things to because, you know, genres are getting so mixed now as well. It's like so many blurred lines. Like, you know, people say like, oh well, what you know, what's the super late night, you know, what genre is it? And I'm like, indie, alt pop, indie rock, like take your pick, pop, synth, pop, what? Synth, what, like figure it out, do you know what I mean? It's and I think that's been really positive for me, because I've been able to explore different types of music with different personalities, and I think the personalities that come into the studio really dictate the output, and that's like really evident on Zella.
Yeah, vibes.
Like Zella sounds like Liv and Max. Like if you meet Liv and Max and you hang out with them for like 14 hours in a studio, like their personalities are like that music is them, you know, and they interact. It's really fascinating with Liv and Max, because they interact with their music the same way that they interact with music that they're fans of. So they get like so buzzed about their own tunes, and they perceive themselves like almost as if they're a band that they like, you know, and they kind of, they have this like real visualization, like how, like, what they can do live. And I mean, Max has got such great vision for that, you know, like their live show, like believe me, their live show is going to be something else. Like Liv's personality is obviously going to come across and whatnot, but Max has got this great vision for kind of how to put the tracks together and MD it and make it all happen, and what can happen, transitions and like song to song. And I think as they grow and as they get bigger and bigger, that it's going to be a really exciting component of their act. The live show is going to be super cool.
Yeah, I think the songs also sound sick with live drums. Like, we were talking about, like, how he was going to approach it when he was on. It's like, oh, mate, yeah, it sounded awesome.
Well, if I was in the know, I'd tell you that we might be recording something pretty cool on Monday, but I'm not, so...
Oh, oh shit. Oh,
exclusive. But then, like, think, like, you know, Zella have just got the, what was it, the new Pop UK playlist on Spotify.
Yeah, sure.
And stuff like that. And then those, you know, those tunes are hitting, like, what was it, 30,000 streams? And then,
yeah,
like, I think Late Night's doing, like, you know, 20,000 streams on that. So like, the songs are really getting recognised now, George, you know.
Yeah, man, it's great to see that people are interacting with it. It's really, really nice to, like, I looked at the UK pop playlist on Spotify, and I saw some of the other artists and songwriters and stuff that have worked on the records, producers, mixers, mastering engineers and stuff that worked on the stuff that's on that list. And I was like, this is, you know, it feels good to be recognized in that space. And I think that Liv and Max really deserve it as well. So yeah, no, it's really cool to see it. There's some really cool records on there. So it was nice to be recognized amongst that kind of thing. And I think it's only a matter of time before the same thing happens for the Super Late Night as well. And we've got a bunch of acts that are in the pipeline that aren't yet live. We've got a new act called Future People. And that's coming, and that's going to be really cool, and I'm really excited about it. So I'll send you boys it through once it's once it's all there.
Yeah, definitely.
I've just checked Zella and the Super Late Night's monthly listens on Spotify. Super Late Night, 19,237. Like, if that was me, I'd be blown away. That's just incredible. Hoodie has had 29,000 listens. And then Zella, they're on 27,000 monthly listeners. I can't believe it.
Yeah, it's great. Find that it's really
incredible.
Yeah, it's
a full
cool,
Ellen
man.
Road, that, George, isn't it?
It's funny because, you know, like, I guess, like, I see it as really positive, and I think that the act, the, you know, the announcement of the acts and their debut singles and their second track that they've released with Zella. Being so well received, like BBC Track of the Week and stuff like that, and the playlisting, it's been super positive. It's great, but like for me, I kind of see it as a drop in the ocean and just the beginning. And I kind of feel like they deserve to be there. You know, like I know how hard they work, and like, you know, like with Zella, like Liv's got that thing that you can't learn, you know, and you can't teach or you can't buy. Do you know what I mean? Like the way that she writes songs. I mean, I've been so like, you know, the outro of Just Like That. We're in the studio.
Yeah.
And we had that bass like ba ba da ba 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 da ba 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 da ba 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 ba. We had that for like months. And that was the outro. And we were kind of like, it was like kick and the snare and stuff. And me and Max kept having conversations like, we need to do something with the outro. You know, we need to do something with the outro. We should really, you know, we love that line, but we think maybe it needs a little bit more, something to just really push it to the end of the song. And Liv was like, yeah, give me a few minutes. I think I might have a bit of an idea. And she just went through onto the mic and just on the spot wrote that outro. It must have been like 6 or 7 minutes between her going from the control room to the live room to that being recorded. And it's just like unreal. You know, she just like opens a lyric book and she's just like flicking. She's a bit frantic, you know, like flicking through the pages and be like, oh, that's kind of cool. And she's like pulling these ideas out. And then, you know, all of a sudden you've got this great moment on the record. And that's the kind of personalities that they are. So I think they really deserve to be recognised. I'm really excited for their future.
Yeah, yeah. So right now people go, oh, it's awesome. You're like, yeah, it is awesome, but it's fucking right. So
we'll, I see. Yeah.
I agree with you.
What a positive start, though. Like, if I was a recording artist, those monthly listens, I'd be pleased with that 10 years into my career.
Yeah, no, well, that's it, man. It's good. I'm glad it's connecting, and I'm glad that they're being recognised by the BBC and by Spotify and stuff like that. They've got a couple of cool features coming up, and we've got another single. The third single is just absolutely insane. I don't know if people are going to expect it.
All right, okay.
I don't know if people... Yeah, I'm not going to give anything away, you know. I'm just going to leave it to be out there when it's out there. It's coming soon anyway, so you've not got
You've made it even more tantalizing saying that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the classic iceberg analogy, isn't it, where people show what people see as success but actually is involved in the success, and it's all the iceberg underneath the water you don't see.
Yeah, there's plenty of that. With all of them, you know, the Super Late Night too. You know, you think like Lou, you know, he was doing his thing and he was a solo artist and he had like 50,000 subscribers on YouTube and he was playing ukuleles and doing covers and all that kind of thing. And then he wanted a clean break as a new act and he's taken on the Super Late Night, you know, as his new alias and his new act. And he's like really taking it forward in such an exciting way. And he's got like loads of tracks like queued up and he's been writing so much in lockdown, man. He's been sending me demos like all the time. And they're great. They're better than ever. So it's exciting.
Should we talk a bit about the 975 while we're here?
Who?
I said, have you seen Nine Hill, George? I was saying it's like when he's got to ask her, when he's pretending he's from Horse and Hound magazine, and he's got to ask her a question about it. I feel it's like that. I feel obliged to ask you about the 975.
Sure. No, I'm happy to talk about them, man. They got something going on, haven't they?
Question one, do you like them?
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, 100%. They're a great band. Their debut album was a really big deal for me personally.
So, how did you like first hear them, first discover them?
I'm going to say YouTube. I think like a music video on YouTube was shared or something like that. I know a lot of my friends and stuff heard them on Radio 1 or whatever, Chocolate came out and all that, and they blew up and all that kind of thing. But I was in the band at the time, and I think when I had my first real listen that I remember, it was buying the debut album on CD in HMV. And then we'd gone to Leeds, I think, to do a shoot or something with the band, and I bought the CD while we were there, and we were all listening to it in the car on the way back, and I just like binged it from there. But yeah, absolutely awesome. Mm. Such a great record.
Do you know what, one thing I feel like, which I don't think I've actually said before, but I feel like for people that like guitar music, you listen to them, it kind of opens a window into more types of music.
Yeah.
For example, I feel like if I hadn't have got into the 975 as much as I have, I don't know if I'd like bands like Laney as much as I do. And maybe like Love and people like them, because I feel like the 975 is almost like the step between like guitar music and then like synth pop music, like modern synth pop music is what I mean.
Yeah, I guess so.
To be honest with you, I think I was quite interested in music production already at the time, and I was kind of going for a bit of a Max Martin stage, so I was listening to all kinds of like wild pop music. So I think when I heard the 975, it was almost like that in reverse. I was like, oh, cool. So it's like all of this other stuff I've been listening to with all of the stuff I already know, if that makes sense.
So and unfortunately, Josh, you couldn't make it last week for Girls, but you said that one was your favourite song?
Arguably, yeah. I mean, somebody else has got a place in my heart, you know?
Yeah.
It's so difficult, isn't it, to pick your favourite song of a band that means so much to you, because you can be like, oh yeah, it's Girls, and then when you hear somebody else, you're like, oh, that is pretty good actually, maybe it's not my favourite, and then you'll hear something else.
They cover so many moods though, that's the thing as well, like they're so like, it's so broad, like, you know, you can listen to some tracks that are like proper, like, you know, late night cry in your bedroom records, and you can listen to those kind of like jump up and down with 80,000 people records, and you know, it's very hard to pick faves, but no, Girls is an absolute bop. I think that music video was excellent, one of my favorites actually of all time. I love how they put that together. I think it's so cool.
Yeah.
I still reference We're Not a Pop Band all the time all with the things time. That aren't even, it's not even relevant.
So I'll funny.
We're not a pop band.
It needs to be in black and white for a start.
Yeah. Hey, when anything's in black and white, I say that absolutely without fail. Yeah, Girls is fucking so great. Have you listened to the most recent album?
Yeah, man, I gave it a couple of listens.
What do you reckon?
I think the less I say about it, the better.
Oh, shit.
It's definitely the most ambitious, isn't it?
Max texts me and he's like, it's a masterpiece. It's the best record ever. Best record I've ever heard. And I was like, I think I actually texted him, but I was winding him up, obviously. I was just joking, but I was like, to be fair, mate, if they shit in your hands, you'd clap, so.
Yeah.
And preaching the converted, aren't they?
He was like, ah, fuck off, man. That's not funny.
I was like,
Yeah, it is. I was texting Liv and I was like, where are the songs at?
It's a challenging listen.
I was like, where's the songs?
Yeah. I get that.
I think from a musical point of view and a technical point of view, it's a better album than the first album, but nothing will ever replace the 1975 in my heart. That's just...
Oh, no. See, I wouldn't say it was better musically. I wouldn't agree with that. I think the first record is, like, so layered. It's so intelligent. It's so, like, well balanced, not in terms of like mixing and production and recording and stuff, but just like the arrangement and like the energy that it carries throughout.
Yeah,
the songwriting, I think, is just that there's just such a moment in that first album that you can really feel, and I didn't get that from the new one. And like, I don't think it's a bad record. I guess there's high standards after the previous ones.
Yeah,
I said on our little album review of it that If the latest record was the first album, that you wouldn't get released. It's something you can only make an experiment with once you're already there.
Yeah, it's like and the Arctic Monkeys doing that record, the Casino Hotel thing.
Yeah.
I should know what that's called, but I don't.
Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino.
Yeah, sure.
yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
So to get there, you need albums like that first album, and I think it's just so undeniable. Like the first album's like perfect. Am I saying?
Yeah.
Is that what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Not far off.
Getting there.
I think Tranquility Base. It's a good comparison because of how different it is from the first release, which I think a lot of people still consider the best release. I think with both bands, that's the parallel. I think a lot of people still think that whatever people say and that's what I'm not is the best.
I don't know. I think AM was the, in my opinion, the strongest Arctic Monkeys.
Oh, really?
Oh, man, that's in my top 10. I think that's one of the best records that's ever been made.
Really?
Yeah.
The lyrics are just on another, and his delivery of them, the way he mastered performance and his art in that record, I just think were unparalleled in other ones. I think maybe earlier albums kind of had more moments, and they were a bit younger and they had that kind of that energy and they were like living in a moment and they kind of blew up and, you know, they were putting those records out. But I think on AM, Alex Turner's just got something that's so like undeniable in his delivery and is so assured in his songwriting and his lyrics are like genuinely compelling. I think that record's just absolutely awesome. I think they were all just masters of not only their musicianship, but like their songwriting, and they knew who they were and what they were trying to achieve. And I think they really understood at the time, certainly their audience and what would really work and what people would, not in like a selling out way, but like in a, you know, in a good way, kind of what people would want.
Yeah. I 100% get what you mean. And I can see why they made Tranquility Base Hotel after that. I imagine they were just looking for that next challenge.
Sure.
It's just when you've just released AM, where do you go after that?
Yeah, you can't release it again. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
You said then, George, like, you said AM was a performance such, and that's different. They've sort of like, you know, they've like times that by however many for Tranquility Base.
Yeah,
like there was more of like this real aesthetic with that album.
Yeah,
like the live sets had that sort of like 70s TV set vibe going on. Did you see the special they did at Maida Vale?
Yeah, it was rocking, man. And Alex Turner's an absolute beast. You know, he's no joke. Like in that performance, he was great. And to be honest, it was one of those things that made me respect that record, even though I didn't really like it. But I just feel like on the on AM, I think he had as much of that, but he had conviction in it. I think he had as much conviction in AM as he did in the next one, personally, for me. And I just think like I got the vibe that he'd written a lot of it on piano and not on guitar, and I could kind of hear that.
I think he said that after AM that he'd sort of run out of ideas, run out of inspiration, let's say, with writing on guitar.
Fair. I must have seen something like that. Yeah, and it makes sense. And I just think, it's a bit like Lars Ulrich turning his snares off, you know, to come full circle in that conversation.
I feel like I should defend the first album. I think for the first album, for me to do some, for your first record, to do something, and you listen to those songs, and you get such an idea of the scenes he's trying to depict, and they'd live those scenes, you know, as well.
Sure.
And it's so real. Like, is it red light indicate the doors are secured? Like, yeah. The lyrics, like, you see her in the green dress. She talked to me at the bar. How come it's already £2.50? We've only gone about a yard. It's like, yeah. Especially living in like the north. That's, I mean, for me, I was like,
oh, yeah, sure.
When that came out, that's listening to things people say in amazing songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just so, because like AM is brilliant. I think track by track, I think there are more, I'm hesitant to say the word skips on AM for me, but there's a couple of songs like Fireside, I think that's a little forgettable, stuff like that.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
Oh, but honestly, that.
I think the first one, I don't think there's a bad song on it. I think it's phenomenal.
I think it's almost like they've communicated the same sentiment in different ways. Like, so when they were that band, they were like a smaller Northern English British band, and they were talking to that audience. And then when they did AM, they were a worldwide household name, and they were talking to that audience. And I think that it's paralleled, you know, like I think they communicate to that universal audience as well as they do, or the lyrics and the music communicates to that global universal audience as well as the earlier stuff did, that kind of like northern town,
that local, like, audience,
you know. I think it kind of it makes perfect sense, and I think they grew with that. But then I think, you know, they obviously just like went off on one with the Tranquility one. Which is cool, man. Like, and who's to say that they shouldn't? You know, who's to say they shouldn't? Like, fair enough. You know, they'd earn the right to do what they want, and so did the 1975. So it's not a criticism, you know, of like their art or like what they wanted to do or the quality of it. It's certainly quality. But for me, I'm not going to sit and listen to those records. So
I think the differences for me is that Tranquility Base is a concept album, isn't it? Like, that's basically what it is.
Yeah.
And there's a very specific idea in what they wanted it to sound like, whereas Notes on a Conditional Form is the opposite. And I think, obviously, you've got to give the, I feel like everything they wanted Tranquility Base to be, it was in the entire thing they did with the sound of the music, the visuals with it, everything, the live performances, all that. Whereas Notes, you've probably got to give some sort of like allowance for like lockdown, let's be honest. But I think that they haven't performed exactly what they wanted that album to be, is what I'm saying. So, we've not seen.
I don't know, man. Like, had they not finished that pre-lockdown?
Yeah, they finished it, but the.
I'm not sure it's a lockdown thing.
No, I mean, in terms of. Because if you. Right, what am I trying to say here? If you listen to Tranquility Base.
Yeah.
And then if you listen to it whilst watching the Maida Vale session, where they've got the old BBC cameras. They've got the 1970s TV set. They're all there in like brown corduroy.
Sure.
To me, then you're seeing the complete idea.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to say. Maybe with Notes now, maybe we've not seen the complete idea. And that's why.
Fair.
I think that's the. Okay, I think the comparison is appropriate between the two. But what I'm saying is the difference between them is that I think Tranquility Base was the full idea. Whereas Notes, I think, is very, it's erratic almost in what's on the record. But I think as well in terms of the release for it, I don't know if we've quite got exactly what was planned, I think.
Yeah, I think we've almost definitely not got what was planned.
Yeah.
To be fair, on that front, post-release, Yeah,
there's another dimension of the art missing, which is the performance.
That's a very concise way of saying it, I think. I was always bad at the explain questions on essays at school.
Love it. Love it. It's great crack. I enjoyed that.
We, I know. So we did, so on the album, just the, I feel like we must mention the song. So we did An Encounter, which is the sort of first instrumental, which is that sort
of dope. I love
robbers
that.
Kind of texture.
Yeah.
And then this is the 12 episode now.
Yeah.
What do you think about the fact that they put these sort of little instrumental breaks on the first album?
I think it's super cool, man. I think it really helps stitch the whole thing together. And I think, I may be wrong, but I feel like they, from day one, decided that they wanted that to be a convention of their act and their records. And I think that component of obviously kind of George producing and doing his thing, making ambient kind of links and that type of music is obviously where a lot of the electronic stuff within their rock stuff and, you know, indie roots kind of came from, maybe. So I kind of get the vibe that it was very much intentional from day one, and that they've always had that in mind to stick with.
Have you listened? You've listened to the EPs, the pre-album EPs, right?
Yeah.
So the
yeah.
What's your opinion on those? Sorry, because they're like self-produced.
I think that my favourite one was Me.
Yeah.
Which one is that on? Remind me.
That's on Music for Cars.
Yeah. That is...
I hope that's right.
Just... Was that self-produced?
Yeah.
Yeah, man, that's got such a moment. That's got such a moment on it. That's great. That's my favourite pre-debut album one. It's interesting because they release like quite a few of the tracks that were on the debut album on the EPs before, like Sex and stuff like that went out, right?
Yeah. George Daniels' Last Scene.
Let's do it.
George Daniels' Last Scene was where's my drum roll, boys? Come on. At 6:35 today. Yes.
PM. Oh, I was having my tea. Why don't George? Why don't you run down what's the future of the studio like? What's coming up? You say you've got the new Future People. Was it the artist?
So we got Future People coming out this summer. It was meant to be sooner, but the obviously the COVID thing's kind of been a spanner in the works. So we've managed to get it's a guy called Jake. We managed to get him down into the studio. Managed to do a socially distant kind of session and managed to finish off his first single, and we're moving on. We've got quite a lot of other tracks written and ready to go. So that'll be dropping this summer. So that's coming out. We've got a new Paperweight single coming out, the acoustic duo that I mentioned earlier. There's obviously loads of Super Late Night and Zella to come. Yeah, man, there's a bunch of stuff. We've got a bunch of new artists that are kind of coming through that are kind of on the down low at the moment. And then a couple of projects that are in production. I've been working on a really cool No Diggity cover recently with a guy called Rupert Stroud. And we've done it in like a bit of a Hozier kind of vibe, which is quite cool. Okay. So that's coming out. That's going to be July, end of July. So that'll be dropping. Which I got high hopes for. It's a bit of a vibe. He's got a great vocal, so that should be pretty cool. That's kind of like one of the more interesting projects that I've been working on during lockdown. So a bunch of stuff, but basically just keep growing the label, keep working with the artists, get them out on the road next year when it's possible, and keep making records and kind of keep building the whole thing up.
When Sleep Real Bad came out, I went for a run with it, and I cued it so it was like every other song on this run, and it was like the energy in that song was just so sick. I was like bouncing, like yes, it's like aggressive but in a really like restrained way. I don't know. I just love the energy of it. It's sick.
I really like that song. I feel like it's the kind of center line of Zella. It's got like the emotive ambient side, and it's got that really like filthy in your face side as well.
Yeah,
it's got these kind of like really pristine synths, and then like Liv like screaming and shouting, like being a punk as well. And yeah, man, no, it's they brought a great energy with the whole thing. That was a really interesting process, that song, actually. It took like took ages. It went through a couple of different kind of
versions before it ended up being the version that we stuck with and moved forward with.
Is this?
It had like a different chorus. Title. And...
Is this where Max said it's like an anti-chorus in it or something?
No, that's another track that's not out yet.
Right. Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's also an interesting story behind that song, but I might leave that for another day. That was the first track that I ever worked on with them.
Ah, oh, no way. So that's like still sustained since.
Yeah, yeah. It's a track called With Your Boys, and it's.
Yeah, you did mention that actually.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We tried a couple of different things with it. I think it's really important to kind of explore, especially when you're developing an act and you're developing the sound and you're kind of figuring out what it's going to be long term as well as short term. We kind of like took it like to the end of the road with a couple of different directions on that track, and then we've kind of settled on, ironically, what was kind of the first version of it.
No way.
For now, anyway.
I was going to say before, like, you mentioned all the acts that are releasing stuff and like coming out, but like, what about you, man? Like, what do you specifically want to like in the coming years achieve with the label and all that?
Well, I think it's I think the aim's the same now as it was a year or so ago, and I think it'll be the same in the future. It's just like release quality music with quality acts that are kind of are going to work hard and really like refine their art and kind of connect with people and make sure that the repertoire that we're putting out is really worthwhile and is to a high standard and really going to kind of connect with people and be a bit of a moment. You know, like, you know, we talked about those records earlier with the 1975 and with Arts and Monkeys and stuff like that. And I think it's really important that people put stuff out at the right time in the right way, you know, and not too soon, not, you know, not too late, not too soon, and just like really refine their art. And for me, I just want to be consistent as a producer and make sure that the way that I collaborate is like really kind of is really consistent, and we pump out music that's like really worth listening to, you know. And we have artists that don't exist, and then overnight they put a song out and they're getting streams and they're getting connections with the audience. And for me, one of my aims is, you know, going to a festival and seeing people singing the songs back at the act, you know, stuff like that. Those kind of real life moments, you know, those kind of those days that you can remember, you know, a lot of it's about that for me. And I just want to make stuff that I'm proud of, you know. At the end of the day, like, it'd be great to win a Grammy, but, you know, if when I die, I've just made a load of records that people liked and I was proud of them myself, then that's kind of, that's pretty cool by my standards anyway. So it's interesting because I've not actually been producing, you know, like in a studio for that long. I've been producing for like 3 years, you know, like in the studio. So yeah, I still feel very much at the start of my journey, if you know what I mean.
The thing with Homefire, I think, from like an outsider point of view, it's not just a studio where you go in and record your songs, and then a few weeks later you get it finished. There's a real like.
You go in to record your songs, and a couple of years later you finish them.
Yeah, but
it's
you know,
a community.
Like, it is. Yeah, it is a community. Like,
yeah, it does feel that. I've never been, but from what Josh tells
me, let us come.
I speak to Lewis. It just feels like a community, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the aims, like, straight from the beginning when I got involved. And it was kind of like I wanted to build a bit of a roster and I wanted to build a team. And, you know, like, I've got musicians that will help out on other people's records. You know, I was doing a session for one of the Future People tracks, and I had a female vocalist that came in for a session later that afternoon, and she arrived and I was like, listen, I need some BVs for this record. She just like went into the live room and just like did some like super like silky harmonies and like oohs and ahs and stuff. And that's what it's all about, you know, just like making our very own kind of sound city, you know, and having all these different people and all these different musicians. And, you know, hopefully everyone's going to achieve the things that they want to achieve and get the recognition that they deserve. And we'll all be looking back at those parties and those sessions and stuff that we've all had, and we've all been together, been like, you know, yeah, it was a great time and it was a great moment where we're all developing this stuff. And there's younger acts coming through, you know. I'm working with a couple of younger artists that are kind of like between kind of 15 and 19, so they're kind of like right at the front end of their songwriting careers. And then we're working with people that are kind of toured all over the world and like doing EPs and albums for people that are like really established and stuff. So it's really cool. It's really positive. And I think it's so exciting to see the people that deserve the recognition starting to get it, and then like that really like inspires all of the other people that are coming through behind them as well. So yeah, like Zella release a single and it gets on the Spotify, you know, UK pop playlist, and then it's like, oh right, yeah, so it can happen, it can be done. And yeah, I think a lot of people think that the music industry is some sort of mythical beast, but really you've just got to put something meaningful out, you know, that connects with people. And if you can do that, then that's what it's all about. And I think that's the kind of core, that's the core of the studio, that's the core of the label. That's what we're all about, really.
Yeah, luck will always play a part, won't it? But there are things you can do to reduce the amount that luck plays in your success and make your own luck.
Yeah, 100%, man. Like, I know, I know a friend of mine he's a session player, and he was just about to go out on the Dua Lipa World Tour.
Nice.
Yeah, and then COVID.
So Josh, it's like, Josh, you know, I can't believe that didn't prick your ears up, man.
It did. Well,
you know, it's one of those.
I think that's a nice end. I think, George, you've sort of summarised really well what Homefire is all about.
Sick, thanks, man. Appreciate that.
Where can listeners find you if you want to share out your Instagram and stuff?
You can find me at GeorgeXHomefire on Instagram. And then you can find us at Homefire Studios with the studio on Instagram. And then you can find us at homefirestudios.co.uk for the website. And you can, you know, get our emails and whatnot and hassle us via email if anybody's interested in getting in touch. Hit me up. Yeah, so that's where we're at.
Amazing. And you have to come back on as well, George, when we're talking about another proper song.
I'd love that. Yeah, no, that'd be sick. Thanks so much for having me on as well.
Oh, no, mate. Thanks for coming on. I feel like we've just sort of been sat here a bit today, just sort of captivated by you talking about like all the stuff. But...
I really enjoyed it, man. It's cool. It's good to talk. For me, I've not had that much feedback from people about the records and their experiences of like what they've heard. Like, it's interesting to see, like, you know, Dan saying about taking it out for a run and like the energy of the records and stuff. And
I mentioned to Max like about the bits of it that are like sound design, like bits of delay and stuff that just add things that people don't really notice. It adds to the feel of the song. But
yeah,
I'm a big nerd for all that stuff. So when like you get shown something, it's like, this is an artist who were just kicking off, this is the first single. So I sort of challenged Max on that. I was like, well, clearly this isn't your first foray into making music, is it? And he was like, well, no. Like, we've been in bands and stuff before, but he shouted you out, George, and was like, yeah, well, this guy's a genius, and that's why it sounds like it sounds. It's sick.
That's cool. It's a combination. It's a team effort. Do you know what I mean? Like I say, like when people are in the room and they're bringing the energy that they do, and they've got that vision that those guys have got. But no, when things are back to normal, you guys will have to come down to the studio, and I'll show you around and I'll show you some bits that we've been up to and open some projects, and I would talk about music prod if you want. Be cool to get into it and show you some stuff and what's going on and what's happening and how it happens and whatever.
And the cupboard where you keep Fruity Loops.
Oh God.
Oh, reskinned it to make it look like Cubase.
Yeah. Oh, I can't believe you'd even call the product Fruity Loops. Like, immediately you go, that's not credible.
It's FL Studio now, isn't it?
Say again?
It's FL Studio now, isn't it? They've like tried to FL make it a bit cooler.
They've done a good rebrand, to be fair.
Like, what does the FL stand for? Fruity Loops? What?
Household name. Steinberg. It's all about Cubase, man. It's all about Steinberg. You know, Ian Kirkpatrick that produces... he did New Rules and Don't Start Now and Pretty Please for Dua Lipa. He uses Cubase, and Steinberg's just the absolute champ, in my opinion. I was talking to somebody about it the other day, and it's such an amazing platform. Like, the way that you can create in it is class. And I know like Logic's super affordable and everybody's got a Mac, but like, it's so good to use. It's so cool. Ha ha. It is, man.
Hans Zimmer uses it. Sick.
Exactly. Yeah. And if he uses it, then that's it for me. Argument over.
Big hands.
eureka moment where they came up with the name Cubase, because it's just such a great name. Can you hear me?
Yeah. I was just thinking about it.
Oh, good. It was like, I'm good. I'm glad I'm challenging you, Josh.
It's a very thought-provoking thing.
Yeah, because it's like Q, bass. And it's like, Q the bass.
Genius.
I'm so confused right now.
It probably means like music production in German.
Yeah, probably.
I'm going to have to Google that later now. I just know that I love Steinberg. Steinberg for life. Shout out Steinberg. Give me an endorsement. Give me some stuff.
Give me a hat.
Yeah, if you listen.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be cool, wouldn't it?
I don't need a cap. I got one.
I want one of those so bad, so...
I'll hit you up later. Yeah, I'll sort you one out. Definitely. I'll get you one sorted. Don't worry about that.
I need one.
I've also got this super sweet laptop bag. Oh, yeah.
Oh, what?
Oh, yeah. That's my laptop bag. Oh, yeah. Ah. I basically just walk around. Soon I'm going to put some stuff on my car, like just home phone stuff. Do you know what I mean? I got the hat, I got the T-shirts, I got the hoodies, I got the laptop bag. Class.
You got the beer.
Got a beer?
Yeah, we've got a beer. Yeah, nice. Yeah, we've got the beer. I don't have any to hand. That's a shame. Yeah, so we work with a brewing company in Harrogate called Roosters, and they're class, man. They're all over the country. They're in like Sainsbury's, a bunch of supermarkets.
They got black cans.
Yeah, they got the let me get this right. That's the baby faced assassin, maybe.
Yeah, that
and
rings a bell.
And they've got the they've got a bunch, so yeah. So we worked with them on making the Open Fire recording beer. I mean, they're just down the road. We could like throw a stone at their place from where we are. So we hooked up with them. They're great guys over there. They're really, really cool, and they're super ambitious, and they're absolutely crushing the game. So we talked about how, you know, the music culture and stuff, and I think people would be quite surprised to know like the music culture in Harrogate is like, it's like a pretty big deal. Like, there's lots of musicians and artists and bands and stuff creating, and it's a really cool place to have somewhere like that where they can kind of collaborate with us and make a beer, and then, you know, people come down to the studio and they drink it, and it's just like a good vibe, you know. It's super cool, and not many studios have got a beer, so it's a nice little
that is
nice
really
little
cool
marketing vibe, you know. It's cool.
Tell that psycho. Amazing. Right. Yeah, thank you everyone for listening. You can find the show on Twitter at the 1975 Pod, or you can find us on Facebook. And I'll finally set up the Facebook page. So if you search Pause It, Play It Podcast, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter.
Our mums probably will.
I haven't even invited my mum yet. Probably. I have, although I haven't seen your mum like it yet. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Josh Rilline without the vowels. Matt, would you like to care to explain?
Yeah, everyone got a drink? Everyone sitting comfortably? Okay, so my Instagram and Twitter handle is phonetically said Junior, and it is spelt JEWKNEOR, or if you're a member of NATO, Juliet, Echo, Whiskey, Kilo, November, Echo, Oscar, Romeo, or if you want to break it down phonetically, it would be... Jew, like the follower of the Jewish religion. Knee, like the bend in your leg. Or, as in either or.
I think... Is that...
Can you all change your handles to, like, pause it, play it, Dan, pause it, play it, Josh, pause it, play it, Matt. So we can just cut this whole... There you go. That's my bit of artist development for you guys.
He's a professional.
That's a great idea. Yeah.
Oh my God. Jesus wept.
But that's become a thing, hasn't it? That's like, I think that's almost as popular as Josh Daniels' last scene as a feature.
I like it. The things that are the most popular are you explaining your Instagram name and going on WhatsApp rather than any of the actual content.
So good.
It's all right though. The concise one is that Dan doesn't really use social media, so there's nowhere to find him. Nowhere. But here every week. Right. And next week is She Way Out, Dan, as well.
Oh, I don't really like that one. Ah! It's more like fave.
There's a video of on YouTube real quick of 1975 playing at the Deaf Institute, and you can see these two in the crowd singing along to it. So
incredible.
You're underselling us there, Josh. Why well, are we singing along?
Yeah.
Go on. Did you want to leave a surprise in there?
I was going to say, yeah, let's leave a surprise.
Also also shouting their Instagram handles to Matt Healy from the audience.
Yeah, thank you everyone for listening to the show. George, 100% come on again, George. We can't wait to have you back on the show.
I'd love to. Thanks so much for having me.
We are back next week with She Way Out. So thank you again for listening. Goodbye.
Whoop!
Yeah, goodbye.
Peace.